Well, I might as well just get it over with. The words Joseph and Joshua will be interchangeable in today's sermon. But what I mean is Joseph, so thanks, Jim, for setting me up on that. Good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm officially nervous now. There's a lot of people out there and a lot of visitors. Welcome. Welcome back to our Africans and our Filipinos. Good to see y'all back, and it is good to see visitors, but I'm nervous. We'll be nervous through this. I'm sure it won't show. I'm sure I won't mess anything up, so we'll see how this goes. So today, I'd like to talk to you, as it says there, the story of Joseph and five things I gleaned from the story of Joseph. Not to say that there are only five things you can get, and of course, anytime you get to use the word gleaned, you take advantage of it. So I want to start, and it's kind of funny. You know several times in my sermons I'll mention the importance of reading the scriptures, not listening, just listening to sermons, not taking our word for what is being said and what I've read, and the importance of following along, but reading. And I started not to put this in here and carry forth with this study, but this sermon, but I wanted to read these scriptures, and there's several here at the first. We're not going to read the whole thing, but there are several parts that I want to read that are important, and we're going to read through this. If you'll bear with me on this story of Joseph, which I hope everybody has some level of understanding of Joseph, one of the children of Israel and one of the families of Israel, Joseph. And so let's start this by reading. In Genesis, we're going to start in Genesis 37. I assume that is up on the board. Very good. I'll know when someone's smiling that I've got a typo or something silly up there. But so we'll start in 37. And it says here, "And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah and his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when the brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him, and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for the dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and his brethren, and his father rebuked him, and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying." And it's always fascinates me, and one of the reasons I like to read this and read continually is because every time I read this story, you know, if it's a year later or whatever, it's always I pick up something else in the story, and I'm not necessarily going to point those out, but it's interesting. You could tell the story of Joseph and forget to tell about how much his brothers hated him and why they hated him, and it's interesting to me to see that Jacob, there was no, you know, it's a joke in my family who my favorite child is, but there was no question in this family that he had picked a favorite child, and how pointed that description was of him. Genesis 39. And so as you, nope, I didn't finish this, I'm sorry. 18 through 32. So this is 37, 18 through 32. And when they saw him afar off, okay, and so so his dad sends him to go find his brothers and see what they're up to. And in verse 18 it picks up, "And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, Some evil beast hath devoured him. and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And Reuben heard it. And he delivered him out of the hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto him, shed no blood, but cast him out into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to their father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it, and they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead, and their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let us not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. I laugh at that. It's like, well, we're not going to kill him, but let's go ahead and sell him into slavery. That'll be okay. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned unto his brethren and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in blood, and they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Now know now whether it be thy son's coat or not. And so we see here, and Jacob realizes, you know, what's happened, even though they never really confessed what happened. They just let him assume what happened. And then you go on to verse 36. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and a captain of the guard. So you see these Midianites, the Ishmaelites, they end up selling him to Potiphar, and we know, of course, the story of Potiphar. Chapter 38 is about Judah and Tamar, and it's not part of today's story. And we skip over to 39:1-9. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him into the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass that from that time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in his house and in the field. And we see here the blessing that was on Joseph. The Lord had blessed him, and that it was a recognizable blessing to Potiphar. And what he saw of this man, he saw that the Lord had blessed him. And I think it's an important point in this story. Joseph didn't do anything of himself, so to speak, but the blessing could be seen upon him. One might think of a light upon the hill. Verse 6, and he left all that he had in Joseph's hands, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. And it came to pass after these things that the master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is in with me in my house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And we see Joseph's faithfulness to the Lord, and faithfulness in this case to his master Potiphar, and he would not give in to this sin. And then, of course, we know from this point that his wife continued to come at Joseph, and eventually he had to run away from her because she was trying to get at him, and he left his cloth, his Hebrew cloth, with her, and then she accused Joseph of committing this great sin against her, and so Potiphar was angry and he threw him in jail. We skip over. I want to skip over to Genesis 40 in verse 8. And of course, we know that Joseph is thrown in jail with this butler and this baker. And these men are given dreams. And we're going to read a portion of some of this. Verse 8 says, and they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, as there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them, I pray thee. And then he goes on in verse 13 through 15. after he hears the dream. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine hand and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former matter when thou wast his butler. And so he gets this dream and he tells the butler, well, you're going to be back where you belong. And we skip to verse 23, where he tells the baker, and eventually he tells the baker just bluntly, based on the baker's dream, that he was going to lose his head. And of course, both of those things happened. And then we skip to verse 23. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. And so what Joseph told the butler said, remember me when this interpretation comes through. And of course, the butler forgot him for a period of time. He eventually remembers it. We skip over to Genesis 41. And we're going to read 9 through 13. And this is where the butler remembers, obviously. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. Pharaoh was wroth with his servants, and put me into a ward, and the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night, and We dreamed, and each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. And to each man according to his dream, he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted it to us, so it was to me, he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. And also, I didn't read this part, but it was also interesting. As Joseph is thrown into the prison, he eventually becomes, again, blessed of the Lord and becomes captain of these guards. So as a prisoner, the guards use him to be an overseer over the other prisoners. And so again, he's used because of his obvious blessing by the Lord. Up to verse 32. Hang on here, 15 and 16. Oh, read 15 and 16. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And then to verse 32, and for that was the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. And of course, we know he had this dream about kine fish and about corn. And that's when he says when he doubled it, because he was talking about the two things. And he told the Pharaoh that you were going to have, based on this dream, you're going to have 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And then reading on here in 33. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out at a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt, and let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of these good years that come, and lay up corn unto the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto the word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in the vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And again, I find that interesting how Joseph was blessed on that. Again, I didn't live at that time. But for the fact that Pharaoh would take a man out of prison, he interprets the dream. Obviously, the Pharaoh had some comprehension that what he interpreted was in fact true. And so he takes Joseph a prisoner and puts him as second in command. I mean, kind of an unusual step in my book, except if the Lord is in charge of these things. But he takes him straight out of prison and puts him in charge. Then Genesis 42, we're almost through this, I promise. Verse 42, I'm going to read 1 through 13. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, okay, and so I should fill this in here. So obviously Joseph and all these things happen. We have the 7 years of famine, all the corn is plenty. And as we'll read on here, you'll see that there was 2 years of this famine had taken place. And now we're at the point where Jacob's family needs food, and he's heard about all this food in Egypt, so he's going to send his sons there. And so we're going to read this in 42:1. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, why do you look upon one another? And he said, behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. And Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy corn in Egypt. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother Jacob, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the family was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was the governor over the land, and he was that sold all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but he made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, ye are spies to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. And they said unto him, nay, my lord, but to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no more spies. And he said unto them, nay, but to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. And they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. Now you may be asking, why did Benjamin not come? And I have to briefly tell you the story of Jacob, or Israel as he's known, had 12 sons, and he had he preferred Rachel as his wife, and he was tricked into marrying Leah, and so he had several kids with Leah, and then he married Rachel, and then eventually their handmaids got involved. But Rachel, the wife that Joseph wanted, only had two boys, and that those two boys were Joseph and Benjamin. Okay, have I messed up the name yet? All right, I haven't messed it up yet. But those were the two sons, and that's why he had this favoritism towards Joseph and Benjamin, because they were with the wife. And again, sounds completely foreign to us to a great extent of all that happened. But the fact that he favored these two sons, they were with the wife that he wanted originally, which is Rachel. And he had thought he had already lost Joseph, so he had no desire to lose Benjamin. And that's why Benjamin did not go on this trip. All right, does that make sense? You with me? All right, skipping over 19 to 24. If ye be true, and the other thing that I think of these as things that might go along. The other thing I want to point, obviously, Joseph, think about what's happened to Joseph, what his brothers have done to him, and you're thinking maybe there's a little bit of retribution going on here of what he's seen of them, and we'll talk about that more. 19, in chapter 42. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me. So shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. And they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter, and he turned himself about from them and wept, and returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes. And you'll see that there is well over 20, or more than 20 years had passed. They did not recognize Joseph as their brother, and ironically, you hear them even talking about it, and they don't realize and recognize that is their brother that stands before them. And they're feeling guilt, of course, of the things that they had done. Skipping over to 36 through 38. And Jacob, their father, said unto them, me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not. So Joseph told them, go back to your father and bring me Benjamin, and I'm going to keep Simeon captive here. And so that's why he said Simeon is not. So he thinks Joseph's dead. They know Simeon is captured with Joseph at this time. And you will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons if I bring them not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him into thee again. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way which ye go, then shall ye bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. And so they... Also part of this, Joseph had filled their bags up with food. He actually put their money back in to their carry-on goods. What are those things called on horses or mules? Side saddles or whatever they are. They had them, and they put the money back, showing my great knowledge of animals here. But they had put the money and the food back, and so they also felt guilty about that because they're like, oh no, what happened? He's going to think we stole from him. And so here Jacob says, no, I'm not sending Benjamin. And he can say that because he has food. Genesis 43:27-34. And he asked them of their welfare and said, is your father well, the old man of whom ye spake? Is he yet alive? And they answered, thy servant our father is in good health, and he is yet alive. And they bowed down their heads and made obeisance. Okay, so Jacob sends them, and he gives them, go ahead and gives them Benjamin to take with him. And now they're back in front of Joseph again with Benjamin. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your younger brother of whom ye spake unto me? And he said, God be gracious unto thee, my son. And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother. And he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber and wept there. And he washed his face and went out and refrained himself and said, set on thy bread. And they set on him for himself and for them by themselves, and for the Egyptians which did eat with them by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination unto the Egyptians. And they said before him, the first born according to his birthright, and the youngest according to youth, and the men marveled at one another. And he took and sent messes unto them from before him, but Benjamin's mess was five times so much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. And continuing on here, Genesis 44:4-12. And when they were gone out of the city and not yet far off, Joseph said unto his steward, up and follow after the men. And when thou dost overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? Is not this it which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth ye have done evil in so doing? And he overtook them and spake unto them these same words. And they said unto him, wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that thy servant should be do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we have found in our sacks, mouths, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of the Lord's house of silver or gold? With whomsoever of thy servants it be found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's bondsmen. And he said, now also let it be according unto your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground, and opened every man his sack. And he searched, and he began at the eldest and left at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack, of course, because Joseph had planted it there, as he said. And so more fear falls upon them. And then 27-34, so they have to go back, obviously, to their father, tell him all of these things. And as you can imagine, Jacob is beside himself. Verse 27, and thy servant, my father, said unto us, ye know that my wife bare me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn in pieces, and I saw him not since. And if you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, ye shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to thy servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass when you seeth that the lad is not with us, that we will die, and thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with sorrow to the grave. And for thy servant became of a surety for the lad unto my father, saying, If I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad and the bondman to my lord, and let the lad go up to his brethren. For how shall I go up to thy father, and the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come upon my father? Of course, I got ahead of myself there, and what had happened is they had brought them all back to Joseph, and Joseph is accusing them, and who is it here? It's Reuben that says this, right? Or is it Judah? Who is this? This is Judah telling Joseph this, right? Okay, thank you. So Judah tells him, you know, we can't lose my brother. I know what we said. We can't lose him, but we've got to take him back or it'll kill our dad. Okay, and so that's why they're pleading for Benjamin to come with him. And then we skip over into Genesis 45, 1 through 4. And it says, Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, Cause every man to go out from me, and there stood no man with him. While Joseph made himself known unto his brother, and he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard, and Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, Come near me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. And of course, there's more to read there, but I've already read a lot here, but I want to read, skip over to, this is not right. 46, 1 through 4. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. And then 48. I'm going to skip this last reading. This is the portion as we pass this story where Manasseh and Ephraim are blessed. And he takes Ephraim, who is the youngest above Manasseh, and blesses him. And Joseph tries to stop, and he says, I know what I'm doing, even though I'm blind. I know what I'm doing. And he blesses the children appropriately. And Ephraim and Manasseh, of course, we have a great history with Ephraim and Manasseh. Many believe Ephraim went on to be our descendants from Europe and whatnot. And of course, we know exactly who Manasseh is based on the Book of Mormon, are the Nephite people, and they were greatly blessed. And then Genesis 50 we'll read later. So, all right, I'm sorry for all that reading, but I felt it was important that we go through that. And now for really the bulk of my sermon. I'm going to skip this. This is just a Reader's Digest version of everything that just happened. All right, so the first thing that I thought of in this was, I think is always important when you're reading a story, is to understand time. In Joseph, when we read Genesis 37:2, Joseph was 17 years old. And then we read in 41:1, at the end of 2 years in jail. So this was actually part of the 13 years, which we'll read here. Then we read in Genesis 41, Joseph was 30 years old. So that's 13 years had passed. Two of those years were in jail. And then, and don't worry, I'll sum this up at the end if you're not keeping up here. But then you had 7 years of plenty where everything was wonderful. And then you had 2 years of famine, and it tells us in Genesis 45:6 that that's when the brothers showed up there. So when you do that math, 30 years minus 17 gives you 13 years plus the 7 years of plenty plus the 2 years of famine. And you have 22 years from the time Joseph sailed to meeting his brothers. And we're going to call that an estimate, about 22 years, all right? So consider this. You know, again, I think about my relationship with my brother, and I see other families, and I don't you only get a glimpse of how other families get along, and we could have a nice fun story time about how we treat our brothers and sisters. But I know with my brother that my parents' greatest fear is that we got along, because if we got along, something was probably going to get burnt, broken, stolen, or destroyed, okay? But my brother and I fought constantly fighting. But I can tell you, I know I love my brother, but I wouldn't think twice about hitting him in the nose either, okay? And so understand that relationship with these brothers, right? Now, we're carrying this a bit too far when our brothers decide to go ahead and either have you killed or they sell you off into slavery. You can understand the obvious issues with that that's happening. I don't think I would do that with my brother. Not even close. Certainly never thought of killing my brother. Hitting him with a few things, yes, but never unto death, okay? And so now what's happened, and this is why I think it's important, is 22 years have passed since this has happened when they see Joseph, and it's important to understand that. What's happened in that time frame? We have no glimpse of really what's happened of Joseph's thoughts. You know, did he struggle at first? Was he angry with his brothers? It's possible. But we see his greeting now to his brothers. And we'll talk more about that. But it's important in my mind to always, you know, think about 22 years in your life. I mean, some of you haven't even lived 22 years, but what's happened in 22 years? I mean, it's an incredible amount of things that have happened. I don't care what you say. So much has changed in your life in 22. You could probably go back 5 years or 2 years and go, you know, look at all the things that have happened. It changes quickly. You know, kids move out. You have kids, you get married. All of these things happen that change things. A new job, another new job. I mean, how many new jobs do you have in 5 years? And then we read in Alma 19 and 38. And this is in the middle of Alma talking to one of his sons, Corianton, about death and what happens after death and all of these things. And I just want to read this one verse here in 38 where he says, "Now whether there is more than one time appointed for men to rise, it mattereth not. For all do not die at once, and this time mattereth not. All is in one day with God, and the time only is measured unto men." You know, and so that time frame is measured unto us. It's important for us to remember that. God does not necessarily look at things from a time point except for us to understand and comprehend things. And that's becomes important in one of the next topics, okay? Matthew 20, 1 through 16. And I fit this in there. I hope you have some comprehension of what I'm trying to get at here. It makes sense. It doesn't exactly fit in here, but I thought it was an important passage. Chapter 20 of Matthew 1 through 16. "For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is in a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers in his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about a third hour and saw others standing idle to the marketplace and said unto them, Go you also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth, the ninth hour, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? They say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, Call the laborers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good men of the house, saying, These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, Friend, I do neither thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that as thine is, and go thy way. I will give unto the last, even as unto thee. And so here we have the scripture, which I believe certainly talks about the gospel and about how the Lord causes people. And there's no time, you know, there's not time served that you have, that I have to serve so many years. Someone could come at that 11th hour and accept of Jesus Christ. And I put this in here, I think, for the obvious reason of time, is that despite whatever time passes, we're supposed to do our job and do it we're asked to do. And it doesn't matter when somebody comes to this gospel, you know. And I think what I'm doing was, when I relate this, I think about these brothers and how during this time passed, and how Joseph's treatment of them didn't change, but the way he treated them, and how, you know, I'm going to get into this. That really relates to another section, and I didn't know where to put it, so I put her here, but. So the second thing that I got, now of course there's a lot of symbolism in this. Many believe as to I that Joseph was a type of Christ, not a Christ, but a type, that there are examples of him as a foreshadowing, as the Old Testament does, as foreshadows the coming of Jesus Christ, and everything that it does, it talks of the coming of Jesus Christ. But what I want to get to here is in Hebrew, and I know you all know this very, very well. Someone could probably even say it for me. What's it say? Anybody got it for me without reading it? Yes, it's on the screen. See, that was a trick question. I did put it up there. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Now, I've told you before, I'm fascinated with the Old Testament because there are so many things in there that we don't understand because it's different than our lives. You know, I just talked about the whole nation of Israel is based off of four separate women he had kids with, and I won't get into that. But there are so many things. And as I was reading through this, and I continue to read to the Old Testament, you know, it just kind of hit me. You know, I think about Thomas. Thomas did not believe that Christ had returned until he put his hands into his side, did he? You know, our job, when we talk to people, the Old Testament is as pertinent today as it was then. We have to have faith that everything that was written in there is true. That these people, that these things, these stories happen. You know, for whatever reason, you know, the nation of Israel was based off of these four different women. There are all these crazy concepts are in there. And their story, they're part of our history, and we have to have faith that these things are true. You know, I am not the greatest person when it comes to symbolism and things. I see things very clearly that the Lord presents in one way, and there's a concept that comes from it. And just like this, you know, everything in the Old Testament is pointing towards Jesus Christ, and the New Testament, of course, is about Jesus Christ. Everything's about it. This is our testimony. You know, if someone asks you for a testimony, you could tell the testimony of Moses or the testimony of Noah or Judah. Or I even messed that up, didn't I? Jonah is the other one. You know, that's our testimony. These stories are true. And we've got to understand that. And I understood that as I was reading this. It doesn't matter if I don't understand. You know, maybe there are things in here that we are not to comprehend until later. Or maybe there are things that I have yet to learn that the Lord's going to show me or someone will teach me. It's important to understand these things. And like I said, many believe Joseph was a type of Christ, and you can look at several things. I'll point those out. Joseph favored by his father, and Christ was favored of his, obviously. Joseph's family did not believe him and hated him, as was Christ. I mean, Christ was rejected by his own nation of Israel, right? By Judah. Both sold for silver, even though Joseph was sold for 20, Jesus was sold for 30 pieces of silver. Judah and Judas were the main betrayers in all of this. As you recall, Judah was the one that wanted to have him killed and eventually pushed him to be sold. Both tempted, but both overcame. Remember the story of Joseph and our Potiphar's wife coming after him. False witnesses brought against them both when he was cast into prison. It was a false witness. So you can see these little subtleties and this preaching and this teaching and this symbolism of Jesus Christ that was going to come forward, of who this man was going to be and what they were to look for. Part 3, Jesus was favored and chosen of God. Genesis 1 through 4. I don't have to... Yeah, I do have to read this because it's the one I didn't read. Genesis 39. No, I did read this one. So Genesis 39, this was the part, you know, and for 39:2. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made him all that he did to prosper in his hand. You know, and so here, Joseph was favored. And why was he favored? It's because the Lord favored him. You know, we have that same blessing upon us. No, we're not all going to necessarily be called to the same chore that Joseph was given or Moses was given. But we all have that we have that given unto us by God. 1 Nephi, chapter 5. Verses 117 through 125 says this, and after they had crossed, and he's referring to these same Israelites, and after they had crossed the river Jordan, he did make them mighty unto the driving of the children of the land, yea, unto the scattering them to destruction. And now do you suppose that the children of this land, which were in the land of promise, which were driven by our fathers, do ye suppose that they were righteous? Behold, I say unto you, nay. Do you suppose that our fathers would have been more choice than they, if they had been righteous? I say unto you, nay. Behold, the Lord esteemeth all flesh in one. He that is righteous is favored of God. But behold, this people had rejected every word of God, and they were ripe in iniquity, and the fullness of the wrath of God was upon them. And the Lord did curse the land against them, and bless it unto our fathers. Yea, he did curse it against them unto their destruction, and he did bless it unto our fathers, unto our attaining power over it. And ironically, here we go again. I just read a verse, and it's just come to me exactly what I was just talking about. You know, this is Nephi exhorting his brothers after his brothers had caused problems again. He's exhorting them, and what does Nephi do? He gives a testimony of the nation of Israel. His testimony, it's our testimony too. We can tell this same story to people as a testament, as a witness to Jesus Christ. And he's doing it right here, and he points it out. He says, look, and what he's talking about is at the point when the nation of Israel crossed over the River Jordan after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And he, you know, and if someone said, well, why did the Lord send them to destroy those people? It's because they weren't a righteous people. And he says right there, if they were righteous, he wouldn't have had to destroy them, but they weren't righteous. And so that nation of Israel crossed over with the Lord's blessing and destroyed many of them, as they were commanded to do. And so there it is right there. I promise you, I just didn't realize until it came together. And all of a sudden, there it is. Another, he's given a testimony unto his brother saying, look what happened. He believed it. This was, I mean, how many, at least 1600 years, this testimony he's giving prior. And he's telling them, you have to have faith on these things and believe what had happened. 1 Peter 2, 6 through 10. First Peter chapter 2, 6 through 10. Wherefore also it is contained in the scripture, behold, I lay in Sion a chief cornerstone, elect precious, and he that believeth on him should not be confounded. Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made of the head of the corner, and the stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now a people of God, which have not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. You know, we are a chosen people. We are chosen, which leads us perfectly into the next one. God has a plan. You know, God has this plan, and we see it take place. You know, if you go back and you read Genesis 46, he talks about all the blessings that he puts upon his sons, and in some case cursings, what was going to happen to them. You know, he knows what's going to happen to our lives. He knows what's going to do, and we get the choice to whether follow him or not follow him. You know, look at this plan of, look what became of Abraham. He makes this great blessing to Abraham, which passes on to his children, to Isaac, to Joseph, or Isaac to Jacob, which becomes Israel, and on to Joseph, and on to those children, and even on to us, even this day. Look at all the things that became of this. You can't tell me for a second that God doesn't have a plan. This morning, and I love this study, and it intimidates me so much, and I'm so glad you asked Jared to do it, not me, but the study of Revelations. You know, every time I get in there, it just blows me away. I loved the many studies we've had on Revelations, but one of the things that I thought of this morning, and Jared had discussed it the first week, and I wasn't here, you know, we as a church, and there's not many churches today, I can only think of one other, that has a historical viewpoint of the book of Revelations, and really the Bible as a whole. You know, you can't tell me God doesn't have a plan. All of these scriptures, these prophecies are being fulfilled. Some have already been fulfilled in our testimony to us. And some are yet to be fulfilled. And coming before our eyes, we can see this Christ approaching. And we're not to be fearful of Christ approaching as he gets closer and closer. We don't know when it is. People are guessing. People are trying to tie down times. But we don't know what it is. But we can see these steps being fulfilled. It's a plan that is taking place. Not our plan. It's not on our time frame. It's not on our time, but it's on his plan and all of these things. And that's why I get excited when you talk about an historical viewpoint of Revelations versus the three others. You know, there are three others that people did in Revelations. Most of it was started by the Catholic Church. There's this view that the whole thing's just symbolic, that it's a story. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't really stand for anything. It just happened. There's some people that try to say it happened at a certain point of history and Revelations is all fulfilled. And then there's this large group of people that exist today that say, you know, most of Revelations hasn't happened. It's going to happen at a future date, and it's going to take place in 7 years, 3.5, and 3.5. And so they take these same dates, you know. But that's not the way I see it. When you read Isaiah, when you read Ezekiel, when you read Revelations, you read the prophecies in the Book of Mormon, it is a plan. It is a step-by-step plan. And that's why a historical viewpoint of these things makes perfect sense. Because as we read through these scriptures and we go through our time, albeit our time is fleeting, it's short, and it's such a little point of time in thousands and thousands of years, you know, we have our point and our place in this history, and what it will be or what it shall be is yet to be determined. But we have to understand that there's a plan. Genesis 48. I'm going to read Genesis 48. 14 through 22. Did I already read this? I did read this, so I won't read it again. I talked about it, didn't I? This is the blessing on Ephraim and Manasseh. Yeah, so this is that. I'm not going to read this. This is the blessing on Ephraim. Well, I am going to read this. I put it here. We're going to read 14 through 20. And Israel stretched out his right, this is verse 4, chapter 48 of Genesis. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from the evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn, put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And so we see this plan coming through, you know. And like I said, many feel that the Ephraim, as you look in history, you know, look how great a people. If we're descendants of that people, you know, in this nation, he's blessed. And then you look at, we know what happened, Manasseh. This was how long ago did this take place? Thousands of years ago it took place. And here we are as a recipient of viewing this. You know, this is our testimony. He has a plan. Genesis 50, verse 20. But as for you, Ye thought evil against me, but God meant it to... Okay, so this is part of that plan. But as for you, and this is when he's talking again to his brother. We'll read the rest of this here in a second on the next one. But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as is this day to save much people alive. Now therefore fear not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them, and he spake kindly unto them, telling his brothers, you know, could you imagine that? I mean, your brothers just threw you into a pit. We're going to kill you. They sold you off. You spent time in servitude, in jail. All of these things happen. He says, don't worry about it. That's what the Lord's plan was. Not a problem. And lastly, this is the one that probably touches me more than anything. This is the one I didn't read. If we read 50, starting on verse 15, Jacob had died at this point, and they were fearful of Joseph, of what he was going to see, retribution. I mean, think about all the stuff that he had done to them already. He had fed them. He made them a great people. He brought them into the nation, and yet they were still fearful of what he was going to do to them once their father was dead. And we read this in verse 15, in chapter 50. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us, and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall ye say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when he spake unto them. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for I am in the place of God. And then he goes on to tell them the plan of the Lord. You know, incredible story. Are we capable of forgiveness? Are we capable of the same forgiveness that Joseph had for his brothers who tried to kill him? You think about that for a second. Think about the people in your life. Have you forgiven them? You know, what's true forgiveness? And we see it right here. There's nothing held back in this. It is forgiveness. It is not us to keep it. It's just a wonderful blessing. Are we capable of this? Let's turn to Matthew 18, 21 through 22. Oh, I'm not there yet, am I? I'm sorry. 18, 21 through 22. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him, till seven times? And Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times seven. You know, that we're to forgive. You know, Joseph didn't forgive and then still hate the person. He didn't forgive and reject them in their lives. He hugged them. He wept for them. Even before all of this happens, you know, it looks like he's going to get his retribution. And he kind of did a little bit. You know, they didn't know who he was. And so he taunted them a little bit and made them be fearful of him, not as Joseph, but as the servant of the Pharaoh. But he didn't just forgive them and forget. He hugged them and he embraced them and he took them into their lives. I want to end on Moroni, chapter 7. I think this part is, like I said, is my favorite part of the five things that it just overwhelms me when I think about it, his ability to forgive as Christ forgave us. Think of our sins against Jesus Christ and what he forgave us. You know, even willing to go up on the cross and be crucified and walk in this land. Chapter 7 of Moroni. 50 through 52. And if a man be meek and lowly in heart and confess by the power of the Holy Ghost that Jesus is the Christ, he must needs have charity. For if he not have not charity, he is nothing, wherefore he must needs have charity. For charity suffereth long and is kind and envieth not, and is not puffed up, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, and rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, if ye have not charity, ye are nothing, for charity never faileth. Wherefore, cleave unto charity, which is the greatest of all. For all things must fail, but charity is the pure love of Christ. And it endureth forever, and whoso is found possessed of it at the last day, it shall be with them. You can make no doubt in your mind about it. Joseph had charity. And he showed it, and he exhibited it just in a few words that he read in this. I pray that these words were good for you, that it triggers you to go back and read this whole story and to continue to read and to study and find yourself well approved. Thank you for your time.